to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200.
Well, North Bay Stacking Jacks. I'm always Mr. Dave Scatina on the board telling me to let's go, even though I don't have my microphone in front of me, for God's sake. How can you go without your microphone?
Hard to do.
S&P futures down, where are we here? I'm looking at Ethereum, right? Not futures. S&P futures down 12, NASDAQ futures down 31, Dow futures down 97. So we're looking like a down open here for a little bit, but that can change. Do we have Mr. Lou?
I am here. How are you this morning?
Doing all right. Hanging in there. I was regaled last night by one of my partners that I met later, and the guys that work in the industry, and I try and keep track of what's going on, and I've been regaled with this amazing story. Of course, this is what's happening. I mean, I don't want to be a doggy downer too late, I guess, but the guy's got the day off yesterday, right? So, of course, one guy's giving him no end of grief about why did you go to the Jiffy Lube to get your oil changed. So the dude goes to the Jiffy Lube right by my place at North Avenue and like Sheffield there. I don't remember where that is. There's this Jiffy Lube right next to North Avenue. There's no place to park. It's just right there. I mean, you go in there and it's, you know, I assume they do a pretty good job. I have no idea, but I've never gone there. I might have gone there once. So the guy goes in there. He's got this, you know, relatively new Lexus. No, I'm going to say new. It's probably 3-4 years old. He goes in there and he's out back where there's like this waiting area. So the guy pulls the car out front, and there's a few people out there. All of a sudden, he's like, "Where's my car?" Somebody was going along North Avenue. There's no place there to park and like stage and watch for this to happen. So somebody's just randomly going down North Avenue, which is always crowded right there. So the guy jumps in his car and takes off with the guy's car. So of course, you know, in this new world, he's got the tracking thing on his phone, right?
Sure.
So they track the thing to like there on Elston Avenue there. There's like this old, and it's been there a while, but they do concrete and different kinds of stones and stuff. So evidently, the guy pulls in the lot, and they just leave it there. Of course, take his keys. And then they get the guys on film and stuff, but the goofball, my buddy, he must have had like almost no gas in the thing. So the thing said, it tells you how many miles you got left, unlike in mine, which is, you know, full or what. He's got the gauge. And it said like 22 miles with these dudes. Must have been afraid to get on the highway with it or afraid to go anywhere because they didn't have enough gas. They just leave it there and take the keys. It's the middle of the afternoon. It's like 12 o'clock. And these are just, and of course the film has, you know, the usual two African American males in hoodies, you know, driving a Jeep Cherokee, which I'm sure wasn't theirs. And they were going to use the thing for a robbery, and when it didn't have enough gas, they just left it. They must have went and got another one. This is happening. I mean, the city is.
You're not. Are you prosecuting? My understanding is they were not prosecuting carjackings there for a while.
I'm not sure. Well, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, somebody else. And then of course, he knows a guy who got his car stolen right at the BP on North Avenue. The guy was somebody else. He's got his. They're like watching the station. The guy's putting gas in, and somebody was having trouble, like some older guy was having trouble. He goes over to help the guy, and he turns around, his car's gone. I mean, you know, this, the amount of, I don't know how I can say this politically correctly, but.
Criminal, just call it what it is. It's criminality.
But it's all over. I mean, they're stalking neighborhoods that never used to have this issue.
Of course they are.
Yeah.
You've got, chief. I read nothing but, in fact, of course, now it's gone to other cities too, because one of Kamala Harris's bail fund guys in Minneapolis has now committed a murder after being let out of jail by her bail fund operation. But in Chicago and San Francisco and New York, you've got a no bail policy for any crime, basically short of murder or other physical violence, even for armed robbery. And these guys are, so where's the deterrent? And I'm not talking about general deterrence, because in this criminal culture that these folks operate in, there is no general deterrence. I'm talking about specific deterrence, which is taking these individuals off the street and holding them. until they either make bail, which is a big number, or they, you know, they're incarcerated. And you know, there's an unwillingness to do this because, at least according in the minds of the people that are making these decisions, the state's attorney in Chicago, the district attorneys in San Francisco and other places, St. Louis, for example, Minneapolis, in the minds of the district attorneys, what you're ending up with if you enforce the law is too many African American young men in prison, in jail. And they don't want that. And so, you know, rather than saying, well, we're going to try to deal with this at a cultural level, which is too hard, we're going to just not enforce the law. And that, I mean, that's the motivation. That was the same motivation that stopped Rahm Emanuel from pushing for a two-year kicker on anybody caught using an illegal gun in a crime, or caught using a gun in a crime. And the city council, Black Caucus came to him and said, we're not supporting that. We're not going to support you because it's just going to mean more young African American men in jail. And it, in the response, I mean, I was dumbfounded when I heard that because I thought, but these are the folks that are plaguing your neighborhoods. And it's, yeah, so there's no, not only is there no deterrent for these folks in a general sense, there's no specific deterrent because you're not taking these people off the streets.
Well, Lou, what is the? I love the answering questions, but it's not like I'm trying to stump the Lou. It's actually stuff that I don't know. What is the general history of bail? It seems to me that especially in this COVID era, I mean, to a certain extent, when you're not trying anybody, I mean, we're sort of at the extreme here. When you're not trying anybody, it seems that having money for the same crime shouldn't be the difference between somebody out for 2 years waiting trial and somebody in for 2 years. What is the history of? I mean, you know, you watch the old West movies. Some guy gets caught robbing something. And the trial's like 4 days later, and he stays in the local jail, and then he goes to trial. I mean, of course, that probably was all BS to start with. But this idea that you don't get tried for like 2 or 3 years, and if you have money, you're out, and if you're not, you're in. How did we ever get there?
Well, the bail, as I understand it, the bail system goes all the way back to, you know, England, but I don't know that, you know, I don't know the history here in the United States. The idea was that you set bail high enough so that the individual is deterred from fleeing or from committing another crime, and you know, that's the thought process. And I agree. There are legitimate concerns with a cash bail system, which is what's been eliminated in a number of these cities. There are legitimate concerns with a cash bail system that effectively is a version of debtor's prison. And, you know, you throw somebody in jail until they can pay their debt, which, of course, they can't earn money to do it. You throw somebody in jail until they can raise the bail. But, you know, I think that ignores the fact that, based on what we're seeing, a huge majority or a significant majority of the people that are being arrested are, in fact, guilty. And when you put them back out on the streets, they go on to commit more crimes. And,
plus,
this is happening in Chicago. I'm amazed that you guys aren't looking at some kind of a revolt there by the business class. Maybe you are because Chicago is losing population like mad. But I'm surprised you aren't looking at some kind of a revolt from the business class, who are seeing story after story after story of people committing serious crimes who have already been arrested for serious crimes. And are back out on the streets because there's no bail policy.
Well, there's
and
kind of,
I don't
there's sort of,
where's the pushback?
Well, there's sort of two things going on. I mean, if you look at
that's a long-winded answer to I don't know.
Well, I mean, it sort of reaches. Well, at some point, if it's high enough, what you're really doing is you're passing the police work off to the bail bondsman. You're saying if that guy lends this guy 90 grand, he's going to watch him for you. Which is, you know, what they do in business all, or in government all the time.
Well,
they pass on to somebody else.
No, because if you don't show up, if you're out on bail and you don't show up, the cops come looking for you.
Right, but I mean, in reality, the bail bondsman's what? He's out for 90% of the dough, right?
Theoretically, yes.
So I mean, their guys are going to keep an eye on you as well.
I mean, if I'm a bail bondsman, and two guys who look like the guys that, you know, carjacked that or stole that car from the Jiffy Lube, you know, show up saying, hey, or, you know, come in and say, hey, I need, you know, my buddy's just been arrested, and you know, I'm not letting them off with 10%.
Well,
I'm saying you're gonna have to give me the keys to a house or something fixed, or something, you know, 50%.
Okay.
Because the risk of those guys blowing the thing off is pretty high.
Well, if you, I'm not gonna accuse any of these people from reading history, but if you do, every time something like this happens, even in alleged free societies like Germany in the 20s and before that, you end up with a reaction from people at some point that is so heinous. You end up with somebody who's, you know, a law and order candidate or worse.
Well, you're going to end up with vigilantes, and I'm sort of amazed that some of that hasn't happened already.
I sort of am too. I mean, I mention this all the time anyway. There was a paper I read out of Washington where essentially somebody said, I won't go through the whole details who the guy is that wrote it, but they said, why are the left and the right do nothing but fight and don't accomplish anything? And the man's conclusion was, we haven't hit rock bottom yet. That it's essentially it's like a divorce proceeding where John's wife would tell you that it's not until the husband and wife that are fighting basically piss away 45% of their money on lawyers that they decide they have to talk. She says it's always like the same number, no matter how much money people have, that they say, okay, well, I hate the guy, but I better talk to him because otherwise we're both broke.
I see what you're saying.
No, what I'm saying is we've had a succession, Lou, here. We had the little girl shot on Lakeshore Drive from another car. This is, Dave, what, a year ago? In the middle of the day. It was like last fall. And then we've had a succession of like four-year-olds shot through open windows of house. We had the retired lady shot coming back, who a wife of a friend of mine shot under Dan Ryan last week. Or 2 weeks ago, every one of these, you reach the point where you say, "This is it. This is the bottom," and somebody is going to say enough. Just like, from what I read, I wasn't around. The St. Valentine's Day massacre was that in the old, you know, mob era. It was okay. Only a few mobsters got killed. And everybody liked to drink booze. Everybody's let it go. Until all of a sudden, it got to the point. Once that happened, people said, "No, we can't do this anymore." What is the bottom here, Lou? How bad can it?
So let me just throw this out. First of all, a lot of these decisions, at least with respect to managing criminal violence in cities, you didn't need to be a rocket scientist or a political scientist or a sociologist to understand that if you turn off the ability of law enforcement to prosecute, if you demoralize your law enforcement people, you are going to allow the criminal element, and we have a very significant criminal element in the United States. You are going to allow the criminal element a free rein, and it is going to expand. You're going to see a rising tide of violence, a rising tide of criminal violence. Now, in a relative sense, This is not as bad as it was in the late 1980s and early 1990s. That's when all this stuff peaked. But it's moving up fast, and it's moving up in a less specific kind of way, so that you're seeing violence affecting more and more people outside of, you know, specific neighborhoods.
But Louis,
it didn't take a rocket science to see that happening.
Well,
my thought process is that the people making these decisions are so ideologically convinced of the correctness of their position that reality does not really intrude on their worldview. And that's what I see happening.
Well, I think,
and you know, we've talked about this. This is a danger for both the left and the right.
You know, Lou, it goes
I mean, I think you saw a classic example of it from the conservative side with the invasion of Iraq. But it's very much a factor in the political decisions that are being made with regard to things like critical race theory and this idea that we have to somehow dial back a system of merit or a system of law enforcement because it has a disproportionate effect on people who are actually not meritorious.
But Lou, you know, we are
or committing crimes.
On one level in the city, it's there's two things here that are happening. One is actually there's a bunch of things, but the thing we're talking about, you know, the young black male issue is clearly an issue, but it also is spreading across on different levels pretty much everywhere. I mean, if you go into Lincoln Park, and I'm going to say the blinds and the discoveries, but it's pretty much everybody. It's not just if you go anywhere near as a four way stop or anywhere with a street light, you can sit and it's a joke. Nobody stops. The respect for law enforcement on any level is gone. I mean, if you're delayed at a light, you get to go through the red. But the stop signs are an adventure. Nobody stops at those. I mean, and these are white people in $80,000 cars. I mean,
I'm not trying to make the problem centers or the problem is significant in the African American community.
Yeah.
But you are correct. It is a across the board denigration of police and respect for law, and the idea that a significant portion of our elect elites, the elect, are somehow immune from this, and that trickles down to everybody else who says, you know, why should I bother if nobody else is doing it?
Well, when I drive the expressways a lot, on the Ryan, it's usually one African American dashes off at 100 miles an hour, and 15 other guys decide, well, if he's getting away with it, so am I, and they all head after him. Now, on the Stevenson, it's going to be a lot of Hispanics on motorcycles going 100 miles an hour, depending if you get the right time when they're all on there. And on the Eisenhower, it's a bunch of white people driving 100 miles an hour. Now, but the worst I've ever seen, one Sunday morning, my mom was still alive, I'm taking her breakfast, and all of a sudden these cars start whizzing by me. I'm going, who the hell are these people? They're all you know, white people. And I look at the plates of the next one going by. They must have been having an emergency session in Springfield of the legislature. Every one of them were legislative plates cars. And the guys driving down there were going like 90 miles an hour down the Ryan, knowing they never get stopped. I mean, it's endemic on all levels. If you can get away with it, you can. You will. There's no thought whatsoever that 90 miles an hour is unsafe on the Ryan. It's not designed for that. It's not the Autobahn, for God's sake. There's no thought at all that the law is that we have a process here, and the process is we elect people, warts and all. They decide that 60 miles an hour is the number, and we live with it or we get it changed. We don't just get to go 80 because we don't agree with it, or 90, or because we could buy an expensive car. That's all gone. We've lost all of that, it appears. The idea that you don't do something because it's not right, or because if everybody did that, it would be chaos. We've lost that somehow, and I don't know how you get that back. I honestly don't.
I don't. I mean, I can't speak for, again, societal trends. I just look at the rising tide of violence within our cities that are basically run by I think, again, ideologically convicted people who think that the law enforcement effort falls disproportionately on a certain group because of race or national origin or whatever, without really acknowledging that, hey, you know, statistically, you're not really arresting. And Heather McDonald's done some really interesting stuff on this. If you want to read her work in City Journal. Yeah, if you look at the descriptions of, you know, who the victims are reporting as criminals, in fact, the arrests are reflecting that makeup. But if you believe that the law enforcement in the country is essentially racist, or essentially, you know, whatever, falls disproportionately on a certain group, then you are going to take these steps to say, well, I'm going to fix that, and the way I'm going to fix it is by not enforcing laws, because it dragnets in too many people from this group. And that, when you talk about rock bottom, I'm saying, you know, we're not near it, because the people making the decisions in these cases are never going to see it. They're never going to acknowledge it. And I mean, at some point, somebody ought to be looking at firearm registrations in the United States and gun purchases by first-time gun owners, which is anecdotal because we don't have a registry, but ought to be looking at that number and saying there are a boatload of people who are going out and buying guns for the first time and having guns in their household for the first time. And that is troubling, and it ought to be troubling.
Try and find the bulls. Hey, one kind of quick question here will be a long answer on your part, I think. But what do we do with the people like in the middle? One of my friends, who she was over watching Notre Dame game with Audrey and I on Sunday. She gets attacked downtown by some lady, African American lady, who hangs around like this 7-Eleven. So she comes out, and the lady tries to steal her purse. So of course, this lady's a Southsider, so she falls off and whacks her right in the nose. Gets her purse back. Now she got coffee all over herself. It's back in the 7-Eleven to get a refill on the cup, and they got it on tape and the whole bit. And the guy's like, "Are you okay?" "Yeah, I'm okay." Well, the lady walks in, and now she starts helping herself to stuff in the 7-Eleven. And last night, I had a meeting. I'm walking down Van Buren. This is right in front of the CBA.
The woman that got punched in the face comes in and starts shoplifting.
She starts shoplifting. The police show up, and they're like, "Do you want to press charges?" And the lady's like, "I just want to, I'm okay." But now last night, I walk over after work, and then walked over to the Board of Trade building, and it's two blocks. It's right in front of the CBOE, right in front of the Board of Trade. Well, there's nobody on the street except four guys. One guy's walking along, no shirt, pants down to, you know, half down his thighs. A couple other guys on the sidewalk. These people, I don't know, I don't think they're criminals, but they need...
Well, I would say the odds are that they probably are in some capacity.
Well, okay, but I'm saying, we don't have the Tinley Mental Facility anymore. We closed it.
I mean, I'm not talking about whether they've got mental illness. I'm just saying, you know.
Well, they clearly can't take care of themselves.
You are likely to run into somebody looking like that who is capable of committing some kind of crime.
Okay, well, not in the condition they were in. They could barely walk. But I'm saying there's two guys that sleep here down the block. They're all these programs, all this money going for these kinds of programs. I don't see any of these people being helped at all. It's not like we're not spending the dough. Where's the dough going?
But again, this is James Wilson, who was a sociologist and a political scientist and an expert on policing, is the guy credited with something called the broken windows theory of policing, and I know you've heard of this.
Yeah,
we've talked about it. Whereby he says, look, if you want to stop criminals from taking over a neighborhood, you don't start, you arrest the violent guys, the big time criminal folks that you can get if you can find them, but you start with the arresting the guys who are breaking windows. You start with the guys who are writing graffiti on walls. You start with the guys who are throwing liquor bottles or whatever out the windows of their cars or breaking them in the streets. You start with the guys who are sleeping on the sidewalk. You arrest those people, and you send a message, and this has been demonstrated in New York and other places. You send a message to the community, we're not going to tolerate anything. Because if you don't do that, if you don't stop the early manifestations or the low-level manifestations of criminal conduct, you send a very clear message to the criminals that you can get away with a lot more here.
Well, but I think when you look at what's happening...
The trouble with that, of course, is that you end up picking up a disproportionate number of people of a certain demographic or whatever that are engaged in criminal conduct.
And
that was objectionable, ultimately objectionable to the people.
I think a lot of these people I'm talking about, they're not... I'm not saying that they never lifted something out of the Dunkin' Donuts. I mean, I don't know. But the point is they deserve some help. And it's not like, I'll use the word deserve. We're paying for the help. The people that are executing it aren't coming across with it. I'm sure there's budgets.
And this goes back. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, actually, I'm not.
But I apologize for interrupting. This goes back to the point that you and I have also talked about over and over again in large urban environments like Chicago. These kinds of programs are not social welfare programs. They are job programs. They are wealth redistribution programs to the people who get hired by those entities with the money that the city gives them. They are not designed to fix the problem. They are simply designed to give people jobs and get some money distributed into certain, you know, into certain groups. But they're not designed, if they solve the problem, hey, that's great, that's gravy. It's like the Chicago public schools. You've got money being spent on all kinds of things, but the education of the children is not one of the goals.
We got to break here a little bit. Let's kind of tie this into where what it
sorry
means
to
for
sound so
no. Well, I know it's there. I mean, I'm going to be worse when we get back from break. S&P Futures down 11. S&P Futures down 31. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. Mr. Lou Michaels is on the phone with us. S&P Futures down 10.50 now. We'll come back just a hair. NASDAQ Futures down 28. Dow Futures down 77. If the Dow was down like 2-something yesterday, a few stocks were the ones that were part of that. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 37.2%. That's 2 days in a row. FTSE down 79. That's 1.1%. We've got the European Central Bank is meeting today, so we'll get some termination out of them. I don't think anybody's expecting too much. CAC around down 16.25%. We're in Asia. We've got Nikkei down 173. That's 0.6%. They were up yesterday. Shanghai up 17.5%. Hang Seng down 604. 2.3%. Hang Seng Index is down 2% as Chinese gaming and education shares take a hit. So, not sure why the gaming shares have, but they're down pretty heavy in Hang Seng over in Hong Kong. As a way of review, yesterday, it was the day before we were down 279 in the Dow. Yesterday we were down 67. S&P was down 6. NASDAQ was down 87. We were down more and we came back a little on the close. Bonds down 1 basis point on the 10-year rate to 1.33. The Bund, minus 0.33 unchanged. Japan unchanged at positive 0.04. Oil. We've got oil bouncing up a little bit, up 45 cents, 69.75, trying to make it to 70. Brent up 52 cents, 73.12. I actually did some stuff in the oil patch yesterday, got a little long in there, very little. When I say little, very little, can't really find a company that I've ever been real comfortable with that just, if oil goes up, the company goes up. They all seem to be kind of a mix between oil and gas and all kinds of stuff. It's really a tough area to play. So when I do it, I step in lightly, shall we say. Natural gas up 3 cents, $4.95, pushing $5, which is real high, real high. RBOB up one cent to 214. We got gold up 710, 1800. It's back to $1,800.60. Silver up 18 cents, 24.24. Copper up 4 cents, 4.28. And we've got the Bitcoin down $20 to 46,351. Again, this was over 50,000, I think, on Monday morning or Tuesday morning. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Go Cubs. Are they still in it?
No, the Cubs, yeah, they're still in it. No, they're still playing baseball. Good morning, 636 in Chicago.
Even that's questionable.
Correct. Currently, the weather in Chicago is 62 and clear. We're going to have a beautiful day. 73 and sunny. For our Phoenix listeners, you start out the day, it's 85 degrees and clear. It's going to reach a high of 110. Traffic this morning, normal buildups on the expressway so far. I have an accident report. Left lane is blocked. Kennedy East before Harlem Avenue, stop and go traffic. In sports, MLB, the Cubs beat the Reds. I believe that's 8 out of 9 for the Cubs.
Yeah.
Sox lose to the A's 5-1. They'll play this afternoon. Diamondback drop one to the Rangers 8-5. NFL kicks off tonight. Tampa Bay hosting the Cowboys. Our Bears play Sunday night at the Rams, and Arizona takes on Tennessee at noon on Sunday. Back to you.
So we're going to start with our usual
Andy Dalton starting a quarterback,
yeah,
man.
Our usual embarrassment on national TV.
Red Rocket.
So Lou, did with your coaching background, we'll change topics here for a quick second. With your coaching background or your family's coaching background, were you? I mean, I was giddy the other night when the Florida State coach iced his own kicker. I thought that was spectacular.
My response to that is simply, who knows what goes through people's heads at the time they do something like that. Somebody saw something, somebody thought something, somebody had a great idea. I've thought this for some time. We are going to start approaching the era of overthinking, or we're in the era of overthinking our decisions on the field. And at some point, you just got to let your guys play football and stop trying to make everything perfect. The perfect is the enemy of the good.
I'm sort of curious as to your read on a rules thing. I mean, I know you were more involved in football than I ever was. The play in question, where the quarterback obviously started the pass, no, he didn't get hit. He starts the pass, and he just thinks better of it, brings the ball back in, and then bringing it back in kind of bumps up himself against himself and fumbles. So they decide that because he was going forward, at some point it's an incomplete pass. Well, if it is, he essentially threw the ball down at his feet. How could it not be intentional grounding?
I think that's such a judgment call, Chief, that as to whether the arm is moving forward with the intention of throwing a pass.
So it was.
So
it was.
Hit,
It was.
In the throwing motion.
No, he wasn't, though. He wasn't hit. He brought it in himself.
That's what I mean. Yeah. That's what I mean. A guy who's hit with a throwing motion, you know, at some point you say, okay, he's in the process of completing a pass. The ball, his hand's moving forward. The ball's going. He's obviously trying to get it down the field. As opposed to somebody who just hits himself with a football, either running with it or whatever. It's a pure judgment call, but the idea that a guy pulling the ball down after he pump fakes or whatever he was doing and loses it, and that being called a forward pass, I think is nuts. But I was at a baseball game, the other night, Rockies game, and I got to watch, a ball that landed, it landed in a way that you could see on the replay there was grass between the ball or green between the ball and the stripe showing, you know, the within the bounds of play. The umpire called it fair. The field dish, and I mean, when I say he called it fair, he was 10 feet from where the ball landed on the ground, called it fair. The replay, I mean, we're all watching the replay in the stands. The replay clearly shows as you can see green between the ball and the stripe, and they left it they left the call.
You mean even the ball? It should have been fouled. It should have been fouled. Is what you're saying?
Well, yeah, I think they said to them, somebody said, well, you know, it's too close to overturn. We can't say that it was categorically wrong.
Baseball,
those kinds of judgment calls are creeping into sports, or are going to creep into sports no matter what your replay looks like. I don't understand that call where the guy's pulling the ball down and hits himself with it. I don't see how you could say that's a forward pass. This idea of arm moving forward is a kind of a silly standard. You look at the whole play, you look at the context. Was he trying to throw it? No. He just dropped it.
What do you make of the idea that Florida State had 13 transfers starting for him?
It's the brave new world of college football.
Yeah, but you have, I imagine you're still registered, but you have been an agent. Allegedly, you're not supposed to be representing people that are already, quote, in school. It has to be happening. There's 1,000 people in the portal. There has to be people that are holding themselves out to, I'll find you the best spot.
Oh, sure. Well, this is going on with respect to name, image, and likeness stuff in dramatic fashion. You have something similar to this that's been going on in hockey and baseball for years, where the so-called family friend, I can't remember the name of the exact exemption, but, you know, the so-called family friend or family counselor who's not, quote, advising, unquote, for compensation is allowed to intervene in these kinds and provide guidance to families on these kinds of decisions. This is the brave new world of college athletics. We are moving, and the NIL stuff is going to move us there very quickly. We are moving very rapidly to this becoming a semi-pro. If it ever was amateur, it's now being moved in the direction of a semi-pro league. I'll tell you what, the past is prologue, Chief.
Yeah.
Because if you go back to the college football in the 1890s, early 1900s, you had guys who circulated through college football ranks who were ringers, who simply moved from one college to another based on how much money they were going to be paid by some booster, and played for various college teams, sometimes two or three teams in a season, and they weren't even students in some cases. They just showed up on the campus. And there was no real way of checking records or way of checking school records.
I thought ringers were only.
This was NC2A football back in the early days, and we are moving back to that era now.
I thought ringers were only in 16-inch softball.
No, no,
no.
In fact, I don't even know where did that term come. I'd love to know the etymology of that. I don't know,
but it's been ringers since I've played. That's a long time.
Yeah. It's hilarious when you think about it.
Well,
but you had these semi-pro players effectively playing college football in early days, and we are rapidly moving in that direction now.
Do you think that Webster has the word ring as a verb?
Ring somebody up, it's been a verb in English for decades.
Well, that's years. I'm talking about to ring, meaning getting another player. That's a
different. Oh no, I don't think so. I've never seen that.
Are you gonna? Well, that's a, you think they're gonna ring up for this one? Is the other team gonna bring other guys?
But I mean, this is what's gonna happen because if the transfer gets too easy, and the transfer portal gets eroded in terms of the qualifications, it's gonna get so common that nobody's going to really buy. I think people are going to stop checking.
All right, speculate a little bit here, but then we got to go back to our other, because I got to tie in our what we're talking about to somehow in investments. But the kid I know, I just use him as a, because they kept talking about the guy because he somehow had a GoFundMe page and brought this poor kid who was all, you know, he was very handicapped. He brought him down to the Florida State game. This is the kid who went to Notre Dame and he's now playing tackle or guard for Florida State, and he got hurt. Hopefully he wasn't hurt too bad. But the big, huge guy, 320 pounds. Anyway, Kevin tells me the kid shows up at Notre Dame as a freshman, 2017. So he doesn't play his freshman year. So by definition, people think that somebody is red-shirted. If you don't play, red-shirted is not a verb. It's if you don't play, you didn't use up, you now have 4 years of eligibility left.
You've still got a year of eligibility, yeah.
So he plays 18, 19, 20. And he plays 29 games, which is a lot in 3 years. And last year, I guess everybody gets an extra year because of the COVID. So now the guy's in Florida State, and he's been Belushi. He's been there for, like, I won't say 7 years. He's now only a junior. So my question is, he's sitting there at Notre Dame last year, and, I'm going to show my age. Who picks up the phone in the dorm room? Does he call Florida State? Does Florida State call him, which I don't think you're supposed to? How does that happen, Lou? How does he get to Florida State?
I don't know how this guy got to Florida State, but I will tell you that there are agents who will operate as recruiters for colleges in exchange for access to the players that are about to go pro, or in exchange for access to players who need NIL counseling. See, The floodgate that gets opened with agents is the money. Once the NIL option is there, you have a way of getting access to this player's money because the player's got some. And so now it becomes economically viable for you to have contacts within the coaching staff, because the coaching staff realizes that a competent agent who can advise on NIL is worth a lot because it's now a recruiting tool. The agent can get a portion of that revenue from the kid, or the kid can pay him under the table. And so now you have agents who will be tagged with the coaching staff, and the coaching staff can say, you know, we can't reach this kid at Notre Dame or with this kid at Texas, but you can. And you can pick the phone up and call his mom, or if you've got a connection to one of his buddies, you can call them and say, it would really be a great thing if you called this guy at Florida State, because the coach at Florida State might be interested in talking to you about a potential transfer. And they'll do it through the parents, they'll do it through friends, they'll do it through whatever. But there's a pain now because of NIL, for example. There's now a legitimate funding mechanism to support this kind of conduct, which again goes back to something we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that what this is going to effectively do is turn the colleges into NFL farm teams even more than they were before.
Okay, so
we're now going to have semi-pro. I think we're ultimately going to end up with a 64-team super conference or super league that plays four 16-team conferences that play a playoff and end up with four teams at the end. Who will then play into the national championship, and they will occasionally reach outside that 64-team conference to grab a Notre Dame or somebody else who can bring in some revenue. In that new world, the only team I see that have the wherewithal to step outside that system would be a Notre Dame, an Alabama, maybe a Texas, but those teams have already been recruited into the
So, Lou, can it be as simple as getting the graduation list from Notre Dame, comparing it to the list of people who have eligibility left, and contacting the people. It also could be. I mean, I'm not blaming anybody. I'm not accusing.
No, it'll be more specific than that.
But is it also just because the kid has 2 years of eligibility left? It doesn't mean that Notre Dame is okay to pay for his graduate school. They may have said, "You got 4 years here. That's enough. We don't think you're good enough," or we got somebody else coming in. And Florida State may say, "Is there any limit to how many years somebody can get paid to go to school?" I guess is it okay for Florida State to pay for 2 years of grad school to get this kid to play, or is it just undergrad?
I think the school can offer a scholarship to do whatever.
Okay,
I think Peyton Manning played, graduated early at Tennessee. I think he was a graduate student his last year of eligibility at UT.
Well, that happens to a lot of people now that they're going during the summer.
Yeah,
but that eligibility, they have to apply for it. The school can say no. If you're a second string tackle, they don't automatically pay for your grad school. They just say, "Well, you got a lot of second string tackles. Get the hell out of here."
Yeah, that's quite likely.
All right, Lou, back to our other.
I know you want to go investment and then.
My point is that all the stuff we talk about on the show, and there's all kinds of different topics, and seems like maybe they're the same, but to me they're different. They're slightly different. When you put together, I mean, I look at this section of the loop here, Lou, and if I were to write a book about it, there'd be many, many chapters, and people would say, "What the hell is this guy writing?" I mean, right now, I mean, there used to be an industry, a securities industry, where an awful lot of people participated, and the idea was the more people that were making markets and stuff, the better off you were, because it became more competitive and it was better for the end user. All that now is down somebody's behind, right? We have three or four people that essentially get all the money, that make $1 million a day, instead of having a whole bunch of people. And if you're from this group that one guy building a super yacht is better for the economy than 1,000 people having bass boats, I think you're seriously touched mentally, because I think if you do any economic theory, you're way better off economically with 1,000 people with bass boats than you are with one guy with a super yacht, I think. That would be my research. Well, this area down here, there's nobody here. I mean, the trading floors are almost closed. The exchanges charge more for quotes and stuff than they ever did. That's how they make their money now, instead of actually making solid markets and being competitive. You have a few people that do all the stuff. You have incredible payment for order flow, kickbacks for your orders. Brokers now get paid for shopping your order for them, not for you. Not us. We don't do that. We don't take payment. But now you have an area of the loop here. Lou, if you had two young daughters and walked down the street, the Board of Trade Visitors Gallery used to be the second most popular tourist attraction in this town after Buckingham Fountain. It's closed. There's nobody here, Lou. You walked down the street yesterday, I saw five people. Three of them, two guys were laying on the sidewalk wanting money, another guy walking down the street with his shirt off and his pants half down. You don't bring tourists here anymore. And these buildings, I went to Ceres for lunch yesterday. I was at a table for four. We're the only people in the place. That place used to...
That's amazing to me.
Yeah, and...
Is this a function of the remote work?
I'm saying it's all this stuff. There's nobody on the trading floor. I mean, they can't. We don't want those guys anymore because they don't deserve to make any money. It's three or four companies that are supposed to make all these markets and make all the dough. So there's nobody there, Lou. So if you do that, then you're rid of all the clerks. You're rid of all the people who used to work for them. You're rid of the offices they used to be in, and people decided they can make these remote markets from another place. The CBOE is bought by the Kansas City. Who gets bought by the Kansas City Exchange? They're nothing, Lou. How can they buy the CBOE, for God's sake? CBOE, we burned our mortgage when I was on the board in the 90s. They leave the building. The building is empty, and they're paying a lease on the new post office. Why would you leave a building that you designed for yourself that four train lines come together and move to the new post office, Lou? Thinking you're going to get a whole bunch of money for this building, they can't sell that place. I mean, the litany of decisions.
Who's moving? That's a good question. Who's moving into Chicago right now?
The people that did move in, the McDonald's and the Googles, those people moved West Loop.
Because it was safer there.
No. They could get buildings cheaper. The downtown was full, pretty much. Well, now it's not. I mean, but I'm saying this is going to, and it piles into Biden's infrastructure bill. Where's this money going? Some of these parts of these cities, Lou, if you get rid of all the reason why people are there, you get rid of Chicago's no longer a manufacturing hub. Okay. Well, maybe some manufacturing, you know, is going the way of the dodo bird. I don't know, but why do 3 million people want to put up with this crap if there's no jobs here?
I agree. I mean, who's moving in there? This is, I think the Journal did something on this about the rise of the exurbs, that people are not going into the cities anymore. And again, this is a function of stuff we saw in the late 80s. People aren't going into the cities because the cities are dangerous and the cities are crowded or expensive, and you know, it's just too much trouble to get in there. And with our big screens, we can watch, we can be entertained at home with a product that's almost as good as what we would see on the stage in the big city.
Well, I have one more.
The draws of the big city to the people you want to come there have always been things like restaurants, theater, museums,
just people,
and sort of general pop parks, general positive activity.
So it's people watching. If you come downtown, you're the only person here, and you feel like you're going to get mugged, you're not coming back.
No.
Yeah, I got another quick question for you about, have you heard this morning that the Biden administration I like the idea they don't have to listen to Trump every day, but in terms of substance, these guys are in a lot of ways just as bad. I'm not at all unhappy they don't have to listen to Trump every day, but but now what you've been talking about is what's happening, this fascist economic system we have with a few firms in each industry. The way they are selecting to go after people, there's not much difference between what the Chinese are doing and what we're doing.
Now, no.
This morning, they're coming out against the... I could sit here and describe, you know, just off my top of my head, and this isn't what I do for a living, probably 10 industries that have no business being as concentrated as they are. All right. But now this morning, we're railing against the meat manufacturers, which, of course, there's been tremendous concentration in that industry in the last 30 years. I could name names that people won't even remember. I remember Manford of Colorado, remember Scott Ladd's, they're nowhere to be found. They've all been bought by these people. There's four people left, or three or four. I mean, there's Tyson and who else? I mean, there's a few others. You've got Sara Lee, there's a few.
But look at, I don't think the meat industry is responsible for inflation, but if you are in a group that is dominated or has a significant number of environmentalists and people who think you shouldn't be eating meat anyway, this is a perfect target for you.
But I'm kind of going down that same road, is first of all, I'll say one thing, and this is a quote from Milton Friedman. Inflation is always and every time a monetary phenomenon. It isn't the meat packers, not that they aren't gleefully raising prices because they can. They are. But the reason why they can is there's too much money around, right?
Yep.
I just got a thing a month or so ago. Somehow or another, I'm such a Luddite idiot when it comes to electronics. I'm still paying every month for Microsoft Office on my home. Why I can't figure out a way to get it for free, I don't know. But, whatever. It's like $15. I just pay it because I like to be honest in some regard. Well, now it's going to be like 20. Microsoft is easily, in my mind, the most pernicious monopolist we've seen in our era. And because Google and the other guys get all the press, they just keep chugging along quietly. I mean, how many people have they put out of business in their lifetime in terms of other people that had. WordPerfect and other, but I'm saying, we don't have time for all that, but the point is, they just raise their prices 15, 20, 25%. They don't get spanked by the Biden administration.
Because they're West Coast and they align ideologically with the people who are the elect in power at Microsoft.
But this is very dangerous, Luke, for these people to be in this position of power to where you kind of go after them. And look at Pfizer. You look at the COVID situation.
Let me give you a classic example, and it involves litigation in which I am involved, so I'm not going to get too much detail. But let me just show you the interplay here.
Right, you got a minute.
This will be fast. You believe right now that Pfizer's vaccine is licensed, don't you?
I suppose they got approved 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's a lie. The Pfizer vaccine is not approved. What's been approved is something manufactured by a company called BioNTech GmbH. It's a German company located in Mainz, I think. In any event, their product has been licensed. They've been working with Pfizer. If you look at a vial of the vaccine, it says Pfizer/BioNTech. That vaccine, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, has not been approved and licensed. What's been licensed is something that it's chemically identical, apparently, or according to FDA. But what's been licensed is something that's going to be marketed under the name of Comirnaty. And Comirnaty has got the FDA license, not the other stuff.
Who's that?
Oh. Pardon me?
Who's Comirnaty?
Comirnaty is the commercial name of this vaccine manufactured by BioNTech for distribution in the United States. That's the licensed vaccine, and you will not find it anywhere. You can't get it.
Well, what are we getting?
FDA, so don't ask me why FDA licensed a vaccine that is chemically and structurally identical, according to them, to the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, but is not the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. They are legally distinguishable, according to FDA, and you can't find vials of the Comirnaty. And the reason I know this is because DOD is involuntarily inoculating service members with a vaccine that has not been licensed by FDA, and the people that I'm talking to have been looking for Comirnaty to use, and you can't get it.
So what is, Pfizer, for lack of a better term, is like an approved generic of the thing?
No, it's not approved. It's under emergency use authorization.
Ah.
And that emergency use authorization has been extended, and that's the vaccine that a lot of people took. People understood, yeah, it's an EUA, we got it. We're still taking it because it's being pushed. But what's being pushed for vaccination and mandatory vaccinations is not a licensed product, at least not yet.
That's unbelievable. What about me? What about me? I took the Moderna one. Where am I? I'm chopped liver?
Moderna is in the pipeline to be licensed, but it's not licensed yet. It's still under an EUA.
Unbelievable. The big lie. Well, if you're big enough, you can lie a little. One day.
Apparently so.
Hopefully, if we ever get big enough, we won't lie. Take care of yourself, buddy. SP,
you too.
SP Futures down only two now. NASDAQ Futures up three, so we've popped up here. We'll be right back, Mr. Dan Janinas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holloway. He's Mr. Matt Weber. No, he isn't. Matt Weber was here yesterday. It was his birthday. It's not your birthday, is it? You've had too many birthdays.
No, it's not my birthday.
Do you even... I don't like the mind to slide by now. There's been so many of them.
I don't play birthdays anymore.
But I have to... Let's put it this way. Audrey has her birthday month.
Most. A lot of women do. I should not say most.
Where she got like five pals, and they take her out with all the rest of them going for her birthday. And when it's their birthday, they all take each other. So it's about 30 dinners a year for the group of six, the gaggle of six females to do birthdays. It's good for the restaurants.
Yes, it is.
Dan, how are you? Just go on in
I'm
Florida.
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm good. Hey, I did. I'd love to have you in town next week. Week after next. We're here, yeah. And we'd love to have you. Hopefully we'll find some places that are open, and we'll have a good time, bud. And I'm dying to meet. You know, I wish I knew some people up the chain at IB, but our big guy way up top died. So.
Okay. Yeah. No. I did notice there were some. Chicago wasn't necessarily making it easy for people from certain states to come in, but it's no problem. I should be all set on that end. It's things here are still open, so we're not really seeing I will say though, a couple of conferences have been canceled down here that are like the ETF conference, which is a big one at the end of September. So I was disappointed about that because that's actually where I originally met Kathy Wood and got the idea for the ARC funds. And they usually have a really good turnout. So, but yeah, I mean, some of them are being done virtually, which is the way that we're doing business today. So hopefully this gets wrapped up pretty quickly and we're back to work. And which I guess probably brings me to my concern. And I think part of the reason that we're seeing this sort of slump, if you will, in the market over the past week is just sort of that the slow to get back to work, you know, slow to, I think the labor issue continues to be somewhat concerning and frankly somewhat confusing in terms of the large number of jobs out there. And a lot of the companies, the CEOs we talked to, are still trying to hire. And they're saying there's a mismatch, which I understand to a certain degree, but I'm not sure I totally understand it. I think there are jobs out there for those who want to get back in the workforce, but I think it's going to take a little bit of a leap for some people who've been out for so long or it's going to take a little motivation to get them back. Maybe having to revisit some, changing some of their career plans or their hopes for the field that they wanted to be in, if they were saying.
Well, there's a whole list. It's kind of it seems like there's a whole list from a lot of the different guests we have on and the stuff that I hear from, you know, listeners and so forth. There's kind of a whole list of, like, little bit of reasons that are, talk about a quick story, Dan. In a previous life, when I was a financial analyst / cost accountant kind of guy, and whenever you looked at a big project, there'd be whatever. If you're putting up a new line together for a railroad car, or you're building, or whatever it is, I don't even know if people do this anymore. But I was always tasked with the job of doing the sensitivity analysis, where you'd say, "All right, this guy says this budget's going to be." $100 million, and you know, what if he's wrong by 10% or whatever? And after doing a whole bunch of these, I drew the incredible conclusion that no matter how bad any individual per net, you know, within reason, basically screwed up in terms of the engineering was going to take 6 months. Well, if it took 9 months, I mean, you know, that was a problem. But it dawned on me that if six people screwed up their estimates by 10%. It was way worse than one or two people screwing up their estimates by 40%. That a lot of little dings along the way caused way more problems than like one or two big mess ups. Because they all start to compound on each other in ways that nobody ever thought about. And I think that's what's happening sort of in the labor thing here. I mean, Carl was talking last Friday. I mean, I don't know if you listened in, but at the one time you should probably, in what you do, you should probably listen in when you're not on, is when Carl gives his monthly labor assessment. And he was talking, the first time he's ever looked at these numbers, he's been doing this for years and years, somehow or another, the amount of people is not growing. just in general, the big number is not growing. So he says, I've never seen that. It's usually 2 million people a year essentially enter, essentially 2 million people a year, the population grows by that much, and that's how, maybe 2.2, and 2 of that ends up in the, quote, labor force, whether they're employed, unemployed, or we don't know what they're doing. They're at least in the pool. But he says the number has not changed in like 18 months to 2 years. So whatever it is, we're like 2 million people short in general from somewhere. I mean, he absolutely cannot explain it. But he says, I've never seen anything like it. So if you look at that, I mean, the Chicago area in Illinois, I know we're losing people. So the idea that they're accusing of everybody sitting on their fanny at home, drinking, with the wife beater shirt on, drinking a beer. I don't think that's happening at all. These people are gone. I don't know where they went, but I mean, plus you've got
a lot of them here.
Well, a lot of them there, but
here in Florida.
Well, plus you have a phenomenon where you paid all these firms government money to pay for these people. Now they're whining they can't hire them back. They should never have let them go.
Right. Exactly. I agree with Carl, but I also think it goes one step further. I do think the baby boomer generation, which is our generation, has taken early retirement or has taken retirement. And, there's a lot of articles I've read on this, but I've also used my client base as an example, and we have a lot of people who were, just on the fringe of, being about to retire, but they're not quite sure what the right time is. And they're trying to see, hey, if I hang on a few more years, maybe the work from home thing has made my job a lot easier. I can hang on a few more years. But more of them have actually said, okay, this is a great opportunity. I don't want to be, I don't want to be dealing with all the stuff that's going on out there. We have made a lot of money in our 401ks and our IRAs. And I think that's something I don't hear people talk about. But you got to remember that we're at all-time highs in the equity markets. So the majority of people have this asset that they may not have even budgeted for, if you will. They may not have budgeted this much. And now all of a sudden they have this extra money. I'm like, hey, we're downsizing from the big house into the Florida condo or whatever, and we can afford, we have this extra money that we didn't anticipate because we made so much in our retirement plans. So that might be another aspect as well. And I know people in all kinds of professions and, including police officers and people in blue collar professions who have made this move that rather than staying in the state of chaos or dealing with the politics or of their that's going on in their profession, this has created an opportunity for a lot of quote baby boomers. And you're right, there aren't people to come in and fill their shoes just because of the demographics. There weren't as many people in the generation behind us to come in and fill those shoes. So I know here in Florida they're actually giving sign-on bonuses for cops come to the state.
Well, Dan, I guess I will go on an unpopular political limb here, but if you have managed to get your 401k up to whenever, when you can leave your job, be it 60, 65, whatever, and it's your dough, and we're not changing Social Security for you, you still can't get it till you're 62, I say go for it, buddy. I don't have any problem with that. But the idea in a city like Chicago or in California, where your prison cards can retire after 20 years, if somebody wants to retire as a policeman at age 52, if you don't want to do it anymore, I don't ever want to force anybody to go to work. But I'm not paying you. I'm not paying you. You're 65. The idea that you work 20 years and we pay you for 60, that dog doesn't hunt. Those numbers do not add up. And yet we're doing that. I mean, if you want to get out of the police force and become a dispatcher, for the ambulance group, or you want to schedule streets and sands people and go find another job for the city, knock yourself out. But we're not paying you at 52. There's no way that we can cover that, Dan. No way.
Yeah, there's an incentive that's actually a disincentive for the economy.
Yeah.
I agree. Totally agree with you on that. And then there's also this other thing that I think happens, that those of us who are dealing with people who are on the, the fence of retiring or closing their business or moving on, or selling their business, I should say, or moving on. And there's also something that happens where, that I think people aren't always prepared for, and that is, what are they going to do in retirement? They may love to golf or boat or have, you know, hobbies, but then all of a sudden a year or two in, and they're saying, hey, maybe I should be doing something, and it's not necessarily too late at that point, but, you know, the decision should be made before they step out, or they should have something else lined up, like you're saying, they're, you know, like, so I agree. One thing I wanted to mention is, with this sort of slowdown, if you will, over the past week, or the concern about growth and everything, I did mention last week NASDAQ, and although it's not necessarily an exciting, high-flying name, you know, it's been up about 5 or 6% over the week where the market has been down. And I think this rotation sort of back into some of these, steady names, these well-capitalized names, these well-managed names, this is a good time to be, like, kind of putting a little bit more of those, you know, put a little more conservatism into your portfolio here. There are still opportunities with some yield that they're hard to find, but I think this is a good time to be doing that rebalancing ahead of what might be a relatively slow period until we either see tapering, which doesn't seem to be coming anytime soon, or certainly I don't think we're going to see any type of hike in rates.
Well, funny you should mention it. Did you see the ECB decision today?
Yes, basically not doing anything.
No, they said they're going to cut back on the asset purchases because they're worried about the inflation. They're up to 3% inflation over there, which is way beyond anything they thought they were going to be. That's what I saw in the Flasher. I'm looking for the bigger article. I just saw the Flash article, and they said they're going to stop, cut back on the asset purchases. And first of all,
this situation is a little different because there's they definitely said that they're not going to do anything in terms of raising rates. They're going to stay steady there, but in terms of cutting back on purchases, there was a special program that they introduced that was quite different from what the Fed does that was related to the pandemic. So there was, I think there were a few differences. I didn't read all the details myself, but.
Well, actually, they're not out yet. At least I haven't found them.
Yeah, they haven't, they still haven't come out. I think they're still, it's going to take a little time to digest it, but I don't see that trend happening. And the other, I guess you might want to call it a frustration, is getting this infrastructure bill passed. It seems like there's no reason that the $1 trillion bill should be moving along, because certainly that will help the economy as, you know, you get people out there, you know, it'll continue to create jobs. And the holdback that we're having with the other $3 trillion, I think, is only going to be detrimental to continued growth. Because it's just putting, it's sort of weighing heavy, I think, on the market. So that, I think that's another issue that should be getting resolved, or should have been resolved already. And it's slowing down. And it's also slowing down a little bit some of the names we've mentioned that are infrastructure plays. Not that it's essential for those companies to have this, because it is going to eventually come to fruition, but it would be nice to see the $1 trillion package pass, so that the things that need to get done to the infrastructure can in fact get done, and at a quicker pace than waiting for the politics to resolve the other piece of it.
And how much, I won't say if it does, I'm going to say, how much is it worrying you that the numbers have to get bigger and bigger for us to stay in the same place? What do you think, if they stop printing money tomorrow, what do you think the growth in this country is? I think it's remarkably negative. I mean, I'm sorry to say that. I don't think it's there at all.
Yeah, right now I would say I would agree with you right at this moment, I think. But in order to get demand up, I think there has to be, so supply is down, so that issue still has to get resolved. But I think there will be increased demand in certain areas, but there has to be some help in terms of passing, you know, for example, getting infrastructure moving forward. But you're right, we're talking about negative real rates still. We're talking about productivity changes. We're talking about huge changes in the labor force, the way business is done, the pace or the acceleration, if you will, of productivity, you know, of growth, absolutely slowing down. So it's maybe coincidental with some of the other stuff going on, but it may be a longer term trend that we're just going to see slower growth. It's not going to be the type of growth that we would normally have at the far end of the cycle, like where we're at right now.
Why? You mentioned it, and you basically repeated what the ECB said, but I know you don't believe it. The idea that these people are trying to sell us How can I be gross about this? If we all decided to pee on the floor, there is a connection between us doing that and the floor being wet. Isn't there?
Right. I mean, yeah. No, I agree.
I mean, the idea that they're going to cut back on asset purchases or stop them, yet it's not going to affect interest rates. Yeah, it is. That's how they move interest rates up and down by creating money or pulling it out. I mean, you can't say you're going to stop creating money and it's not going to affect interest rates. How could it not?
It will at some point. I mean, obviously, raising rates will impact it more and faster. But there are two pieces to this. There's the tapering, and then there's also the piece of raising rates. And to a certain degree, I think we need a little bit of inflation to make the economy work, and certainly getting out of the negative, you know, getting out of the negative real rate situation will help. But it seems like there have been some pressures that have held us back, including like Delta variant and some of the slow, like I was saying, some of the slow to act in terms of the infrastructure bill, and some of the slow to the act in terms of other policies that I think could, you know, whether it be tax, you know, taxes, or, you know, making sure that we maintain taxes. But I don't see any. I agree with you. I don't see any major effort to try to improve growth at this point. And I think in this quote stagnant environment, you know, this is the time to be looking at names like a MasTec, or looking at names that have some yield, sort of steady names, and maybe rotating out of those high flyers.
Yeah, and what do you think, just the simple stuff, somehow along the line, we're going to have to figure out what are we doing? We talked about this yesterday. I mean, what are we doing with China? I mean, we're positive, we're negative, we're on, we're off. I don't see you and I being, I think, relatively rational people, and we'll even include David in there. I would never think that our policy is enough anti-China to where if there's a, when I say anti, so let's say we want to make it fair, which it never has been with China, but let's say the Trump accusations, or whatever you want to call them, I don't see you and I going and getting the money if we could, because there's a huge diversion between whether we can get cash or whether a big company can get cash. If we see essentially a hole in the economy, a need hole, same thing, that's the way our system works, is for guys like you and me and the listeners saying, wow, somehow or another the umbrella manufacturer in China, something's wrong with them and they're not here or whatever, so we're going to make umbrellas. I would no more do that. First of all, we couldn't get a loan, because the bank's right. Going to tell us, what are you two idiots doing? The next administration's going to say China's okay, and they're right back, and you guys are out of business. We're not giving you. There's nowhere near enough political structure for you and I to do what middle class people have done for the last 50 years, and what made America different is you and I say there's a need for umbrellas. So let's get our butts in the umbrella business. Get a loan, get the thing built, and get them out there. There's none of that happening. We have a millennial generation that has got a millstone around their neck of student loans. They can't get a loan like this. The bank won't give it to you. It's impossible. I won't say impossible. Very unlikely that anybody can fill that void the way this thing is structured now, with the loans, with the property, with the big companies seeing it and figuring out a way to screw us. I mean, this is not the America of the 60s and 70s where somebody can see a need and get there. Why are we so surprised that these supply bottlenecks are not being dealt with in a competitive economy? Guess what? We're not a competitive economy anymore, I don't think.
Certainly not as we were, you know, like you're saying, 40 or 50 years ago. Certainly mindset is incredibly different than, despite the fact that people are waiting for their Amazon orders, they're stuck out on some of the freighters in the Pacific trying to get into Oakland and Long Beach. So I agree with you. I think that there isn't going to be the same focus on certainly certain industries, the same interest, if you will, on certain industries and making money in those industries and providing, you know, better products and services and all that. And the sheer number of people to be able to make that happen, or to have the insight to make that happen. So I am totally on board with you on that. I think that's gonna kind of keep the growth, you know, keep some, you know, hold our growth steady and keep our growth from expanding in the years that.
Well, we've gone through 12 years of essentially free money for some people, and right. I think it's harder to get a loan right now if you and I own a plumbing company than it was 12 years ago, and I think credit card rates are higher. How the hell can the Fed be that screwed up?
Paying attention to statistics that are changing, I think, you know, not really following statistics. And I think the other thing that's happened with the Fed is being reactionary rather than proactive, you know, and that doesn't, you know, as you know, in investments, you have to think ahead. I mean, we have to anticipate what's going to happen. And as somebody was mentioning recently, a political, you know, saying that I saw recently, we had to do with the fact that the stock market isn't the economy, and I started laughing, thinking, stock market is a leading indicator of the economy. It always has been. So if people aren't going to be thinking ahead, if they're just going to be responding or reacting to everything, it is going to change the ability for the market to grow and the ability for the economy to grow if you're just waiting for something to happen and then respond to it. And that seems to be what the Fed is doing.
Well, they're pumping up. I mean, if they panic an inflation number, which I think they might be going to here soon. My read, Dan, is that the big investments in the VIX in November. The only thing I'm wondering if that isn't somebody thinking or already knowing that we're going to have this big CPI spike in November. I can't think of any other number that's month specific that you can sell October and buy November at that size and know whatever. And believe me, I hope I'm totally wrong on this. I mean, I'll buy beers around if I'm wrong, because I'll be happy I'm wrong. But something weird's happening with these trades I'm seeing, and I can't put my finger on it, which bothers the hell out of me, of course. But in the companies that you're into, I mean, if all of a sudden this collapses a little bit, which I'm not hoping for, you're essentially thinking that the guys you have are making money or still making money. They might take a little nominal hit, but they're still going to be okay. They're still going to pay their interest or dividend, and it's a little bit of a pause. And then I think you're staying away from the ones that, you know, might be $400 now and might be $80 and take a decade to come back. And I think we're all trying to avoid those. But then again, there's a couple in there that probably are going to keep going. I'm having no confidence that I can pick out of the ones that are real high, the two that are the winners. Are you? I mean, it seems hard to.
I would say I probably have less confidence in trying to pick those, you know, the heavy hitters in this environment. You know, it's because there are too many things that I think will happen, that can happen and will happen in the next few months. I think we have a little bit more headwinds than we've had, and I'm not really sure what changes to kind of make them tailwinds. But at least for the near term, at least for the next couple months, I think sticking with those steady eddy names that are paying some interest and, you know, some dividends might not be a bad thing in this environment until the picture's a little clearer.
What do you think of the I've had some interest from a lot of my clients have been calling me the last few days, and I'm going to admit to this, I cannot, as one person, I don't have the bandwidth to really understand, and I'm saying anybody does, the oil industry, or if somebody says, I think oil's going to 75, I'm not sure I can pick the companies that are real oil price sensitive. I mean, other places are, I can pick the ones that maybe are more natural gas sensitive, the ones like you like in the, what is it, Southwest Energy and people like that. But it's really kind of hard to pick somebody in that industry, that is just what you want. You know, I mean, I actually think that despite everybody's attempt to, you know, go electric on everything, I'm not so sure this oil area isn't like a buy for at least the next 5 years or so, and yet I'm not sure I know which one to buy.
Well, I agree. It's not, we're not going to be flipping a switch and everything is going to be electric anytime soon. Noble is a name that I've mentioned in the past. Noble Corporation, they went through a workout, Their stock came around 25. It dropped down to around 20 because some of the bondholders couldn't hold equity, and the, like PIMCO, for example, a big bond shop, couldn't hold the equity. So it dropped about 20. Well, it was up 10% the last couple days, up 10.5%. The stock price now at 27.5, I think, is still a buy. It's it's a offshore rig company. There were a little bit of concerns about, you know, a couple of their rigs getting having some damage during the hurricane, but they are very sensitive to the price of oil. So this increase that we've had over the past year, you know, they're particularly sensitive to Brent. And so Brent being in the 70s again, I think is attractive for these guys. There's no, their backlog is the highest that it's ever been. There's a huge amount of demand coming from all over the world still. These people are already in place. This particular company has chosen the best rigs. They recently sold off a few and they got really good prices. They got, you know, $300 million just for a few rigs that were less technologically advanced. So, well-managed company, extremely well-capitalized when they came out of Chapter 11. And so that's I think that's an example of a name that still has legs, still has room to go, and again, will probably perform well in a week like this past week, has performed extremely well, because it's sort of been overlooked, but I think there's opportunity still in the energy sector.
Some of we got a lot of PTI clients, mostly that deal with my brother more than me, that are very knowledgeable in this area, but they've really been sticking with the they're like the Dan Janitas of the world. They're really all over the storage guys, the pipeline guys, yeah, people like that. But those guys really don't move with the price oil. I mean, they're just good investments, I think, which is fine too. But some people on TV love this Marathon, but there's two. I can't figure out which one of the Marathons is the one I want. I mean, isn't one of them the refiner? Which one moves with price? Do you have any idea? I don't. So I stay away from it.
Yeah, Marathon has not been in my purview. I haven't really been following that Marathon very carefully. I think obviously they have they have a retail segment as well that would have some, there would be some impact. But they're, you know, it's a huge organization, and what we do, we tend to look at names that are more specific, you know, like Southwestern having, they have certain operations, they own certain land in, say, Appalachia, and certain area where they can drill that's very specific, as opposed to kind of looking at the large players that are into a number of different areas. Because in this environment, you're right, there will be parts of their business that will be sensitive to oil price swings, and then there will be parts of the business that won't be. And then some of it's hedged as well, so you have to really know the company when you're looking at an oil company rather than making just a blank statement on the industry or trying to just, you know, take a dart and whatever name you hit, you invest. So it's true of any company. You know, management makes a big difference. The particular parts of, or the particular segments that they're in make a big difference. And, just being aware that the company, there are companies that will have sensitivity to oil, and there are companies, like you're saying, that won't, or won't be as sensitive to price, you know.
Dan, we got a dash, buddy. We'll talk to you next week. The next week you're going to be in studio, right?
The following week.
Yeah, the next time is the next week. You'll be on, and the week after that you'll be in here, and you'll be on for a whole 2 hours. You'll be my co-host.
Sounds good.
All right, buddy. Looking forward to it. SP Futures down 5, NASDAQ Futures down 6. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief.
We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of HomeSource Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P futures down 550. NASDAQ futures down 550. You don't see that too often, do you, David? Well, they're both down the same amount. Dow futures down 27. Individual stocks. Stock that's moving up is Lulu. So we're all going to be, are they still selling the ones that were see-through? Can you still get those on eBay? Remember the ones that were see-through?
Not sure.
Yeah. Well, if they were see-through 5 years ago, they probably have, they've probably broken through by now, wouldn't you think? Just saying. Anyway, Lulu's up $47, $427.76. A good thing I didn't try that one yesterday. Anyway, we're in Europe. We've got the DAX down 3.25. It was down more earlier. It's unchanged. The FTSE down 70. That's a full 1%. CAC around down 1.02. The ECB came out and said they're gonna slow their pandemic bond buying because they're concerned about the 3% inflation number they have now. So. They didn't say how much they're going to slow, and if that means they're going to be running back towards zero on their number anytime soon. Nikkei down 173.6%, Shanghai up 17.5. This is the big one here, though. Hang Seng down 604, 2.3% is the all the Chinese gaming stocks. The education shares took a big hit. I don't know how much education shares are on the exchange over there, but whatever they are, it says they're taking a hit. Yesterday, Dow was down 68, S&P down 6. NASDAQ down 88. The bonds, 10-year here unchanged at 1.33. The Bund, despite what the ECB said, is still unchanged at minus 0.33. Japan unchanged at positive 0.04. Oil is up 10 cents, 69.40. Was up more a minute ago, or an hour ago. Ran up 18 cents, 72.78. Natural gas down 3 cents, 4.88. Didn't quite make it to 5. That's still real high for natural gas. RBOB unchanged at 2.13. We've got gold up 610, 1799.60. It's dropped back under 1800 here, but still close. Silver up 24 cents, 24.30. Copper up 6 cents, 4.29. So copper's creeping back up towards the high again. And we've got crypto down 553, 45,000. When I say crypto, I mean Bitcoin. 45,818. It was over 50 on Tuesday morning, I believe. So it's been a crap ball this week, down like 11%. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
7:37 in Chicago. Today's weather, currently it's 62 and sunny. We're going to have a beautiful day, high of 73, sunshine. Phoenix listeners, starting out the day, it's 85 and clear. They're going to hit 110 with sunshine. Traffic's getting a little messy out there. Heavy buildup on the Kennedy, Eisenhower, and Stevenson due to construction. There's a disabled vehicle in the right lane block, the Tri-State, north before West Grand Avenue. There's an accident on the left shoulder of the Eisenhower right before... Well, I lost that one, sorry. There's an accident...
Somewhere in the Eisenhower.
Eisenhower's a mess right now. Accident, right lane block, Bishop Ford, west before Cottage Grove. In sports, MLB baseball, Cubs beat the Reds 4-1. Sox lose to the A's 5-1. Diamondbacks drop one to the Rangers 8-5. NFL kicks off tonight. Tampa Bay hosting the Cowboys. Our Bears play Sunday night at the Rams, and Arizona takes on Tennessee at noon on Sunday. Back to you, Chief.
I think the Giants are coming to play the Cubs, and they're like, we got to play these idiots.
Yeah, the Cubs are off today. Yeah,
and look at the way they're playing. The last thing anyone Giants want to do in the middle of the race
right.
is to come in here and lose 2 out of 3 to the hapless Cubs. But the way the Cubs are playing, it just might happen.
Very possible.
John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. Hope you had a good Labor Day. And belated happy birthday wishes to Matt from yesterday, too.
Your name was being bandied about on Sunday. Actually, Monday. Whichever day it was. It was Sunday because I went to the cemetery where my parents are buried and so forth. And I've been swearing I was going to clean up around the monuments, and I did. Well, the headstones, I won't say monuments. Of course, I was telling Audrey, she was checking all the real old names in the cemetery, and I said John Flanagan was the guy who told me that the reason why this cemetery's out here is there used to be a streetcar that came out here from essentially Bridgeport down Halsted Street to Vincennes to 111th, and that's why it's way the hell out here. Well, now it's not out here, but in those days it had to have been out there. And I was curious, there's people that supposed to be croaked in 1865. That place wasn't open in 1865. They moved those people there or what?
No, some of them I think have been moved because the only Catholic cemetery in the city at the time of the fire in 1871 was where Lincoln Park is now, like North Avenue and Clark Street. And that was not a very, well kept place. It was right on the lakefront. It was, kind of a health hazard and always had been. And after the fire, what burials they could identify and remove, they did. Calvary was the cemetery for most Catholics in Chicago up in Evanston. And I have relatives on my mother's side who were here before Mount Olivet opened, and they're buried at Calvary. Mount Olivet opened in 1885, and they really marketed, the grave purchases in the Southside Irish parishes. And, it was a concerted effort to get people right away to sign up, and you pay a little bit every month, like an assurance society, and then the first time you needed a burial, you'd have to come up with a little bit more, and eventually you paid the thing off over time. But I have some of the paperwork on it, and one branch of my mother's family that bought in 1886.
Wow.
And it's a real, it's now really pretty full up. There's a couple of spots still available there, but it's kind of a whole travelogue for Southside Irish.
Oh, yeah.
Irish life and everything else to walk around in there. It's a fascinating place.
But the streetcar had to help.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was a long ride, I tell you. And the Grand Trunk, too, because the Grand Trunk would make a special funeral stop at 111th or 115th, I forget which.
Yeah.
And they could, carry mourners and the caskets. And it would be timed. You can see it in old obituaries, meet at the 22nd Street Depot at such and such a time, and there would be a funeral train. You could have several, families bringing their loved ones out to bury on Mount Olivet on the same train.
Yeah, it was a long trek by horseback.
And iffy, too, given how the roads were.
Yeah, well, we were talking earlier with Lou. I was talking about one of my buddies who got his car stolen at the North Avenue Jiffy Lube yesterday while he was getting the oil changed.
You're kidding.
Oh, no. And there's no place there to sit and watch. You just happen to be two hoodlums. How often do you hear this description? Young African-American males in a hoodie. They're driving in a Jeep Cherokee, which probably was stolen, and they see somebody pull his car out the front, running, the guy go back in to, find him, and in the 30 seconds it took to find him, this guy hopped in the car and took off. Went across North Avenue and made a left turn, which is precarious enough. But he only went to the Elston Avenue, that stone place, because he hadn't gotten gas yet. The thing said you could only go like 22 more miles, so the guy must have said, I don't want this car. He parked it in the lot, got back in the Jeep with his buddy, and took the keys. So the guy had a tracker on his phone, which, I of course don't have, and they knew the car was not moving at the place, so they show up and the car is just sitting there. But now, of course, he can't get in. Well, he can get in because he's got the thing on his phone that you can open the car doors. This is all new to me, right? But then he had to take it over to the Lexus place, and it's $300 to get new keys. This is the new world, David. I mean, I don't think I like the new world all that much. But anyway, it kind of led us into a discussion of downtown here and what's going on in the South Loop, which, well, not even the South Loop. Well, it is the South Loop because it's in the loop, where South Loop is really out of the loop, right? So, the damage that's done here, and this has got to be places all over. Matter of fact, one of our listeners, I have several listeners, and they all, at some point, they must have all come to Chicago when we were on the score, Jan. But I have probably 7 or 8. All of them are ladies, and they are from various parts of the country that came here. And they must have stumbled on Jan and I when we were on the score. But anyway, they've been listeners on the podcast forever. So I hear once in a while I'll get an email talking about observations that they've made. And one of the ladies yesterday was telling me how they went to some almost like a touristy kind of town in Ohio somewhere, or maybe it was even Pennsylvania. And they went down Main Street, and it was supposed to be this, you know, this iconic little town with all the shops and stuff. She says, none of the shops are open except for Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's like nothing open. There wasn't even a breakfast place in the town. And this is on the main drag. You know, the main drag's 2 or 3 blocks long where they get, you know, the iconic Main Street America. She says, everybody's closed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. She says, well, whatever's going on, it's not just in Chicago. She obviously listens to the show. She said, it's sort of everywhere. And, the thing used to always mystify me, Jan, at Pullman, I could see the finished car. I wasn't a big drawing reader, but I could look at the drawing, but I could never conceptualize, like, the manufacturing engineering. I was always fascinated with that. Manufacturing engineer, for those that don't know what I'm talking about, you look at a drawing and say, okay, here's the side of a railroad car. Here's all the parts. Here's how they all go together. Well, somebody's job was it to say, here's how you start. You take these two parts and this bolt and you screw those two together and they can tell you just by looking at the drawing what has to come first all the way down to the end. So now you got the side of the railroad car. And I could see how they all went together, but I could also see myself putting the wrong 10 together and have to take them apart because I forgot the first one type of thing. And, I don't know with all the stuff that happened downtown with the amount of homeless people all over the place that are, for lack of a better term, a serious deterrent to anybody bringing wives and daughters down here. If I'm no shirt, have shirts on, or wandering around in pants half down. I mean, these people need serious help. And then there's people the homeless people here that I talk to, and they all worked for a place that got bought by a place. They got closed the next week, and they're just out, and now they don't know where the hell the business even went. It's just not where they were. And they're employable, but they're not going to move to Tulsa in their own car and show up and go looking for a job. You know, if you point them at the place they're going to go, I don't know what that even means politically correctly in terms of mental health or whatever, but they're clearly functional if helped even a little bit. You know, could they show up at a Walmart and stock the sports aisle? Yes. Are they capable of going from 5 different places and give interviews? I'm going to say no. I don't know what that even means, Jan. You know more about this than me, in terms of, you know, how you even, describe that. But, you know, very functional if you give them a chance. And I know we're spending a lot of money and all this. There's this massive combination of stuff down here. Then you have the people that are taking advantage of it, which is the flat out crime with the muggings and stuff. Then you have a mayor that went back to a mask mandate. So all the people who are supposed to come back in September have now put it off till November. You've got, you know, nobody wants to ride in the train cars. I mean, you've got all this kind of crap happening. But if you put me in that job, I'm not so sure what I would do on day one, Jan. I mean, do I have to try and petition the SEC to get these exchanges open again, which they should be, at least at some degree? I mean, what comes first? The way the place looks, the jobs, the people? I mean, somewhere along the line, this all kind of meshes together, sort of like a human body. And when nothing works, when it doesn't work, I mean, if you look at a corpse, you don't say, well, gee, if I could just get the brain working, well, the brain's not going to work because the heart's not beating. Well, if I could just get it pooping, well, it's not going to poop if it's not eating. So, I mean, in other words, what would you even do? What would be your succession of things you would do that were a year from now, things are, quote, I won't say okay again, but at least something?
Well, you know, it was easy to shut everything down. getting it back and up and running again is quite another matter. And certainly if they open the exchange, you know, a mass employer, all of a sudden those people had to return to their place of business. You know, it would be tough for a while because people are, you know, used to their habits of eating or relaxing in their off time or whatever. But, you know, there could be things like food trucks that could fit the bill. And you still you see those downtown in some places because there's no real restaurants or corner places to speak of anymore, you know, since the lockdown.
I wouldn't know where a place to go have breakfast around
yeah,
anymore.
And, you know, until you have people, you know, you're not going to get any of that stuff to come back. You're not going to get anybody's going to sign a lease for a coffee shop or a fast food place or something if they don't have any patrons that are itching to get in there and going to be there on day one. So it has to come from I think, you know, getting people into the mindset that on day such and such, there's going to be an open, you know, exchange. There's going to be an open hotel. There's going to be an open whatever. And you got to be there, and we'll figure out how we serve you. We have you know, some contingency plans, and it might be rough at first, but you until you stimulate that, there's no way you can get this up and running again. The thing that floors me is when you walk around downtown now, and there's absolutely no street level businesses at all.
No, none.
For block after block. After
well, there's
block.
No people on the street, so what,
right.
I mean, what kind of deal? Except a few hoodlums.
Right, and the creepy factor or the terror factor involved in that. I mean, it's bad at night certainly, but it's really bad during the day. If you're by yourself, or if you're above a certain age, and the only thing you see are empty stores, and if some homeless person sitting out in front of a doorway of a building, do you really want to walk down that street? Or do you really want to be downtown at all? And it's like what you've been saying on your program for a while now that. Nobody seems to realize how urgently we've dug a hole that needs filling, backfilling right away. This has now reached a critical point where if you haven't done it yet, I don't know what's going to make you do it. I don't see any real debate about this. I don't see any SOS signals from City Hall or the aldermen about what's really happening here.
Well, they're still getting paid. So as long as they're still getting paid,
right.
It's okay. But I mean, I think, you know, much as it might be unpopular, I don't think you can force Flanagan Law Firm to come back to work. But you can say to the Federal Reserve that has this massive building down here, get your ass back to work.
Right.
I mean, you can say to the courts, we're having courts. the hell with the Zoom. I mean, it's to the point, get vaccinated and get in there. I mean, I think we're there. And I think it has to start with, I mean, if everybody was back at City Hall, I guarantee you the restaurant across the street from City Hall would find a way to open up.
Of course.
But I mean, there's an awful lot of people in downtown. If you take there's a lot of people down here, but if you take the schools out of here and you take the government employees out of here, there's sections that don't have much left.
And you can still see it on public transportation, Tom. I mean, I've had minimal reason to go downtown at all, but when I have, I'm usually the only person, maybe one other person, on an L car or a Metro car. That hasn't changed. I haven't really seen a big uptick in that. Of course, I'm not going early in the morning as commuters would, but I suspect that it's still way, way behind where it was 2 years ago.
Well, there's a lot of, when I come in at essentially 5:30 to quarter to 6, there's more and more cars on the expressway. But not many turning this way, and still I'm the first car in the lot.
Yeah.
So I don't know where they're all going, but they're not coming here. So the moral is, so if David writes up this show today, the summary, is the moral of the show today to not have any gas in your car, so when it's stolen, the guys just leave it?
And any other safety features or dead man switches or whatever else you can buy so that you can kill the car. You know, from remotely, after somebody does steal it.
Something to be said about that.
Business in that.
Well, funny you two mavens should mention that. If you have the little-known favorite college thing, if you have, what's the system you buy, David? They give it to you for like a year, you buy a new car, and then you can keep with the OnStar or whatever it is?
Oh, yeah, for the emergency, you know,
yeah.
Connection, like,
They can shut your car off.
They can also listen to everything that's going on in the car.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but when we were given, get a lot of this. We were getting seminars. Back in the day, when obviously this was a bustling place, there was a firm that gave seminars down here. I'm going to say two weeks a month, and we would be somewhat of a co-host, but we didn't do the seminars, but we would give a lecture on. And how orders entered the floor, and we would take people on a floor tour, and we would provide that piece of it because people love the floor tours, and we would do mock trading on the trading floor, and people absolutely loved it. And but we'd, a couple of nights we'd go out for when the Excelsior was still open, we'd go over and have a couple of adult beverages. And I met some very fascinating people. One couple is here, and the guy goes, "Well, I get to write off my trip," and I go, "Okay, how exactly do you do that?" And he says, "Well, I own a car dealership." This is maybe early 2000s, maybe as late as we didn't really do too many after the 2007 thing, but say before then. The guy goes, "Well, I'm here to repossess a car." They go, "You're gonna do what?" I'm always fascinated by this. The guy goes, "Yeah, I own a dealership, and they got this new thing called, I don't know, whatever the Ford one is, and I forget what brand it was." And he goes, "Yeah, I bring a key, and we find out where the car is. We can tell where it is, and we immobilize it, and then we just go in and I hop in and start it up and go." And he says, they actually for a while they would just turn the car off, like if somebody was driving it. And I said, you do make sure that the thing is like in park, don't you? And he goes, guess what he says to me? "We do now." What do you mean now? He goes, "Well, when it first happened, we used to just turn it off, and the guy'd be in traffic, and he'd have to pull over to the side and couldn't get it back started, couldn't figure out what the hell was happening, and they'd tow it someplace, and we'd go repossess it from where the tow guy took it." And I go, I said, "What was your liability on that?" And he goes, "Well, yeah, as soon as we figured out we might have some liability, we only do it when it's in park." And I'm like, duh. So what you guys said, it's not like they can't do it. OnStar, if they want to repossess your car, they can turn it off if you don't pay. If you got OnStar or that other stuff.
Well, they could probably make it misbehave, too, such as you don't want to go near it.
Well, yeah, I don't know if they can steer it or anything. We're going to have the heater, like, in the summertime, the heater go on and won't go off or something.
Just kill your air conditioner.
I can see David coming into Stacks and Jackson's 5 below 0, and all of a sudden his air conditioner goes out, he can't get it off. Dave, you would not be happy, I'm just saying.
That makes for a lot more honest people with car loans, Tom.
Well, I would say, yeah. But, honestly, if I were to look for a truck right now, I would get something before 2000. I don't want any of that stuff.
Oh, of course not. I mean, I make light of it, but I think we're just going to have more of it. And we got more enough now than most people can afford. That's one of the reasons people don't, go to the cleaners to afford a car, because it's got all this junk in it that you don't want and that can, breaks easily. And it's also just kind of like being smarter than you are and taking control of the car, doing things that you don't want it to do. So.
Well, my older attorney buddy down the block, who I tell stories about him all the time because he has some of the most amazing things. He's a criminal attorney. I said, "Bill, did you just get a new car?" He goes, "Yeah, I got a new car." He goes, "God, I can't stand it." I go, "Why?" He goes, "He's got so much junk on it. I finally got it to page 2 of the manual." And I said, "That's it." I don't even know what this stuff does. I don't want to know. He's the only thing I do use, since he pulls out of a garage all the time. He goes, "I do use the backup camera. Because other than that, I don't know what this stuff is. I don't want to know. I turned off the help me change lanes, or if I go to the other, I turned all that stuff off. I don't want any part of any of that stuff." He goes, I know I paid for it and it's there, but my wife's giving me no one to grief. I should embrace all this stuff." And he goes, "I'm not embracing anything. I turned it all off." He goes, I just want to drive the damn thing. He said, "But I will use the backup camera, because I am backing up, out of the garage every day, make sure nobody's behind me." But
and the warning system and all that, I think that's been a lifesaver, and certainly it's cut down on fender benders and everything else, because that was really when I think most non-fatal car accidents took place, when somebody's backing up and not watching or caring what's going on behind him or her.
Well, the cynic might say, Jen, that when cars were safe to get in a crack up at 25, people went 50, and when all of a sudden you got the airbags and their seat belts, and it was safe to get in a crack up at 40, everybody went 80. Now that you got airbags and everything, and you probably could get a crack up at 60, people go 100. So we're going to go twice as much as the safety, no matter what.
And did you see the statistic I just saw in the paper the other day about the huge jump in traffic accidents, even when ridership or car driving was down like 13 or 14%? It was just an explosion in car accidents.
Well, there's a
you can see why.
There were explosion in deaths, but overall, the insurance companies paid $29 billion less in car fix expenses than the year before.
And of course, didn't translate that to any savings on the part of their insurer.
You know what? A couple of companies sent a check. I mean, State Farm is a mutual, supposedly. I didn't get a check. Or they're not mutual anymore. I don't, one of these days, you have to walk me through how you go from being mutual to not mutual or whatever. Because I used to actually get a check from State Farm every year. I'd get my bill in December or whatever it was, and 2 weeks later, I get like a $20 check for being part of the State Farm family. I haven't gotten that in years. But all right, John, take care of yourself, buddy. S&P Futures down 2, as the NASDAQ Futures up 1, so we've got the ECB news and everything, and we just flattened right out here. 310 was the employment number, so that was better than expected. So we're kind of right at break even. We'll be back tomorrow with Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.